Welcome to this lecture on advising clients on redundancy issues. My name is Dean Wootton. Now, from the 1st of July 2020, employers will start to assume financial responsibility for their part-time furloughed staff, i.e. they can bring back staff part-time from that date, and they would take responsibility for paying for that part-time. I don't think they're the ones at risk of redundancy. But from the 1st of August 2020, the employer will take responsibility or start to take responsibility for staff that are still on full furlough. So in August 2020, the employers start to take responsibility for all the employers' national insurance and the 3% pension. And then going through September and October, they also start to take responsibility for some of their regular pay in addition to all the employers' NI and the 3% pension. So I think some employers are going to have to look at this and assess their post-lockdown staffing requirements. All the time the government are covering furlough pay and the related costs, there is no cost to the employer. Once we go into the 1st of July, then gradually the employers start to take responsibility. And many will have to make tough decisions over the coming weeks. It's fair to say that redundancies are expected for these staff that are still on full furlough. Now, undoubtedly, lawyers will need to be consulted, but clients will turn to their accountants first. And that's what this lecture is about. And just being able to talk to our clients about the redundancy issues that they have to consider in the next few months. Now, the key issues under redundancy are collective consultations. Now, that will be for 20 or more redundancies. The selection process, got to be careful there. The required notice period, there is a statutory notice period that we need to adhere to. The interaction of furlough, because I think many of the redundancies will be of staff on full furlough. So interaction of furlough and redundancy. And the final payslip calculations. Right, so collective consultation first. Now remember, this is only for those that are making 20 or more redundancies. Now, those employers must notify the redundancy payment service before a consultation starts. They do so by submitting Form HR1. And they have to make sure they do that within the permitted time frame, i.e. they've got to give at least 30 days notice. I submit HR1 outside 30 days before the first redundancy, if 20 to 99 proposed redundancies. That 30 days increases to 45 days if it's 100 or more redundancies. So they must submit Form HR1 in good time. There are unlimited fines for failure to notify the RPS. Now, there is no requirement to notify the RPS if under 20 proposed redundancies. I would say, however, that it would be prudent for those smaller employers to go through some kind of consultation process, but they don't have to notify the RPS. So a formal collective consultation for those that are making 20 or more people redundant, they must consult with union representatives or elected staff representatives, or if neither, then directly with the staff. They must provide them with the required redundancy information in writing. That would be the reasons for redundancy. That's easy, COVID-19. The numbers of expected redundancies, let's say five. Well, it would be five, would it? It would be 25 if we're going through this process. The selection plans, i.e. how you're going to select. The dates that the redundancies are expected from, so maybe 1st of September, say. They've then got to respond to the questions the representatives or staff ask. And then once the decisions have been made, they need to issue notifications of redundancy. So quite a formal process when making 20 or more redundant. What about the selection process? Well, this will apply to all employers making redundancies. Now, the business must make a decision as to who to make redundant. It's not an easy decision. They won't like making it, but they have to make it fairly. Now, that could be because of skills, qualifications, aptitude. So that's their decision-making process or selection process. It could be standard of work and or performance. It could be attendance record, disciplinary record. There must be a fair basis for deciding which staff you're going to let go. And we've got to be careful with this because unfair dismissal actions loom if the employer acts in an unfair manner. And we have to be particularly careful during furlough. For example, when we made staff go on furlough, or asked them to go on furlough, then some might still be working and some are on furlough. There might be a temptation to make the ones on furlough redundant. But actually, how was your decision to put the staffs on furlough arrived at? It could have been for reasons that wouldn't stack up in an unfair dismissal claim. It might be, for example, you based it on age because you thought that making people slightly older, who may be more at risk to COVID-19, putting them on furlough would be a sensible option. Or maybe you put on furlough those that might have had childcare issues. So there might have been a process that you went through which wouldn't survive an unfair dismissal action under redundancy. So be very careful in furlough. Now, there is a statutory notice period which the employer must follow for redundancies. If the employee has 1 month to 2 years' service, they must give at least a week's notice. If it's 2 to 12 years' service, then it's at least a week's notice for every year employed. So 5 years employed, 5 weeks' notice. If they're 12 or more years employed, then it's 12 weeks' notice. Now, the contract may give the employee more. So if they've been employed for, say, 3 years, technically that's a 3 week period, but the contract might say you're on 4 weeks notice. So always look at the contract. But the contract shouldn't give less than the statutory. So how does this interact with furlough? Well, employers might not be in a position to recall furloughed employees. Restaurants, for example, they might not see themselves needing all the staff they previously had because of social distancing within their restaurant. So at the moment, they're not operating. But going forward, when they do come back, how many people will they need? So many will start the consultation procedure during furlough. And they will give notice of redundancy during furlough. Now, staff can be furloughed for their notice period. The government should continue to cover 80% of their regular pay as normal. But I would say the employer should top that up because you're entitled to your full notice pay. And that is therefore 100%. So I think the employer should top that up. Now, some employees will be eligible for statutory redundancy pay. Now, to be eligible, the employee must have a contract of employment. They must have at least 2 years' continuous service. They have been dismissed, laid off, or put on short-term working. Taking early retirement does not count. So, statutory redundancy pay, it's an eligibility criteria. And if you hit the criteria, you are eligible for statutory redundancy pay. Now, if you're not, let's say you've only been employed for 18 months, say, the employer can choose to give redundancy pay because they're not eligible, but they can choose to do so. So what are the statutory redundancy pay rates? Now, you count back from the date of dismissal. So it's half a week's pay for each full year of employment up to their 22nd birthday. A week's pay for each full year of employment after their 22nd birthday. A 1.5 weeks pay for each full year of employment after their 41st birthday. And you only count complete years. So let's say I've got to let somebody go who's 35 and they've been with me for 5 years, 2 months. So I look back and they've got 5 complete years. In the 5 complete years they've been with me, they've always been over 22 and under 41. So therefore, they are 1 week for each full year they've been with me. So 5 years, 2 months means 5 years of qualifying service. So that's 5 weeks of qualifying statutory redundancy pay. Now, the length of service is capped at 20 years. And the weekly pay is going to be capped at £538 or £560 if you're in Northern Ireland. Now, of course, that's the statutory amounts. The employers can pay more if they want to. So the individual is getting some redundancy pay. What is the tax and national insurance on that redundancy pay? Now, employees do not pay tax on their first $30,000 of redundancy pay. I can't see many redundancy settlements being higher than that. The maximum, when you look at the 20 years cap and £538, etc., it's going to be about £16,500, something around there. And I can't see employers voluntarily paying more than that, simply because they're going to be, I would think, short of money. So up to £30,000 tax-free on the individual. Employees do not pay national insurance on any redundancy pay. So on their $30,000 and on any excess, they wouldn't pay national insurance on any excess if they did get more than $30,000. Employers pay national insurance on redundancy pay over $30,000. So I would imagine most are paying under $30,000, as there's no tax on the individual, there's no national insurance on the individual, and there's no national insurance on the employer. Now, pylons, payments in lieu of notice, and accrued holiday pay, they are taxable and subject to national insurance. They are just normal. So normal tax, normal insurance for the individual and the employer. Saying that, on the payments in lieu of notice, I can't see many employers asking staff to leave immediately, because they would then, as an employer, become responsible for that payment in lieu of notice. I think most employers would be expecting their staff to be with them for the duration of their notice period, albeit on furlough. Let's have a look at that final payslip. Now, you've got to give proper notice, and let's assume that has been done, and the employee is on furlough for that notice period. Now, that final payslip should read, furloughed pay 80%. Now, I believe the government will still cover that during the notice period. The employer, I think, should top that up. So the employer will pay 20%. There should also be on that final payslip accrued holiday pay. There should also be the redundancy pay that the employer is either obliged to pay or has decided to pay because the individual wasn't eligible. And that comes up with this total amount. Now, do notice there that the employer is responsible for the 20% top-up, all the accrued holiday pay and all the redundancy pay. The government grant will not cover that. The government grant should, however, cover 80% of the regular pay during the notice period. Now, these statutory redundancy payments, they might make some employers insolvent. Now, those employers that still feel they've got a business should contact the Insolvency Services Redundancy Payment Service and explain their predicament. Loans are available from that service if they feel you're a viable commercial concern. The repayment dates are, or repayment term, is about 1 year to 3 years, but it's got to be negotiated with the redundancy payment service. And now you only get that loan if you're a viable business. Now, if you're not a viable business, then you're not going to get the loan. And in extreme cases, employees can claim their notice pay, accrued holiday and statutory redundancy from the government. Now, this is simply because the employers are probably going to go into liquidation. There's no money there to pay out their obligations, so the employees can go direct to the government, and you claim via an online service, and they claim their notice pay, accrued holiday and statutory redundancy. Well, that concludes this run-through on redundancy payments. As I said, it's important the employer takes legal advice, but their first port of call will probably be us, so therefore we need to be able to talk to them about the general provisions for redundancy, but they must seek legal advice. Thank you for listening. My name's Dean Wootton.